I'll just say this. Can all commissioners see and hear?
Yes.
Okay. Can all members of the public see and hear?
Yes, I can.
Art? There you go. Okay. I will just say this meeting is being recorded. Lisa Shepherd, go ahead. When you call the roll, also indicate your permission to record by verbally stating permission to record.
Okay, now you have to officially call the meeting to order, Lisa, then I'll do that.
I call the September 1st, 2020 committee of the whole meeting of the Glencoe Park District to order. Please, Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
Excellent. Member Boren?
Yes.
And can you say permission to record?
Permission to record.
Member Colby?
Yes, permission to record.
Member Ludden?
Yes, permission to record.
Member Underdunk?
Underdunk, yes. Here and permission to record.
Here, Brooks?
Yes, permission to record.
Excellent.
Okay, it is our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement per our posted policy during the coronavirus crisis. Comments may be submitted via email to Lisa Shepherd prior to the meeting. Lisa Shepherd, please read any public comment received via email.
I just checked, and there has been no emails sent to me regarding this meeting.
All right. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment? If so, please limit comments to 3 minutes per person. All right, I will take that as a no. We will move on to discussion of the year two and year three future capital projects. Lisa Shepherd, Carol, and Chris will lead the discussion.
Excellent. So we had a great discussion at our last committee meeting and formalized our year one of capital projects. So we would like to plan out for 3 years. So at today's committee meeting, we'd like to talk about year two and three, knowing that, that sometimes those change slightly due to emergencies or changing finances and such. So we review them every year, but we'd like to kind of have a marching orders for 3 years for proper planning. So we're going to start off the discussion. I know we gave you a lot of information, but the one question that came up after the last discussion was more information on Friends Park and why we're recommending repairs to that in such a short time frame. So I'm going to throw that over to Chris Liner just to expound upon his memo, and then we'll answer any questions you may have. So Chris?
Good evening. So I'm going to just share the memo so the members of the public can see what we're actually talking about.
Thank you.
Here we go. So can everyone see the shared memo?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes,
so as you recall, we discussed two different year twos, you know, one being that we had the park grant and one being that we did not get the park grant. So in not getting the park grant, we looked at the Friends Port in Place as one of the items that we wanted to address. As Lisa stated, there were some questions. So I will kind of start from the beginning. So I don't, you know, typically like to criticize, you know, previous staff or consultants or processes, but I want the board to understand kind of how we got in this position and what we have to do to take care of it. So in 2012, the existing Friends Park at the time collapsed while it was in use. It was quite the production. Staff and commissioners and a large community input process took place throughout that time frame of the community input and the development of the project. We actually had three different executive directors. So Lisa came to the park district, and about 6 weeks later, the board approved the bid. So there was quite a bit of change at the district, and there was quite a bit of change swirling around the project. So we started with a community input process that really wanted a $1 million park, and it's in the center of town, and at the time, we couldn't afford it. I mean, we were just coming off of the Take a Center renovation. We had significantly depleted reserves. We were just at the point where we were starting to kind of shell money aside for future projects, and we had champagne taste and a beer budget, basically. So what we ended up with was a park that was very, very focused on finishes, and it was not a project that was done with a great emphasis on the kind of structural types of things that we include in our projects now. So we were very focused on promising a really great park to the community, but the execution is where things kind of went awry with this project. So What we basically have is a universally accessible playground for 2 to 5 year olds and 5 to 12 year olds. Universally accessible is defined as a park that can be used by somebody with mobility impairment. So wood chips are technically ADA accessible, but it's usually the rule of 1 in 3. So for every 3 playgrounds you have, your best practice is to have one of those playgrounds as universally accessible. So once we complete Duke Park, we will have 3 universally accessible playgrounds. It'll be Friends, West, and Duke. So we'll have ticked that box to meet that industry standard and that notate of the law as well. So this is right now our only universally accessible playground. Replace once the condition once Duke opens. So we know that the playground equipment itself is made of steel and high impact plastic, which we typically see a lifespan of 15 to 25 years. What we're having issues with significantly is the port in place. So at the time that this was done, port in place was starting out as kind of a new product in the industry. People saw it as the magic bullet to maintenance-free parks. We don't have to rake the chips. We don't have to, we don't have to do the kinds of things that we normally do on a playground. The challenge with this is it's just honestly not a good design. What we have is port in place that is not typically you encapsulated with concrete. So like if you go to West School, you're going to find that the port in place has a concrete ring around it. So the port in place is separate from any other safety surfaces, from chips, from sand, from dirt, whatever it is. At the same time, typically when you do a port in place playground, the playground has to be the high point because debris and dirt don't filter down through the port in place. So when you have a wood chip playground and the bush bed gets rained on and a bunch of debris flows into the wood chips, it just decomposes. It's not an issue like at Woodlawn or Vernon. But at Friends, that debris doesn't decompose. It sits on top of the port in place, and basically that, the sand and the wood chips, effectively sands the wear layer off the port in place. So I'm going to show a picture here quickly. Can you guys all see this?
Yes.
So we've got this is not an artist conception. This is actually what the port in place looked like on opening day at Friends Park. So this is what that same area looks like now. So that black that you're seeing, it's not just dirt. It's also the wear layer being worn off. The green that you see is a large scale repair. So that's a repair that we had to do this year because basically in the area that you run around this play structure, they completely sanded the port in place off down to the safety surface. So what we did at West to not experience this is we have a double thick wear layer in anywhere that we defined as high traffic. So swing bays, slide, bottoms of slides, merry-go-round, that was not done here at Friends. So I'm hesitant to say, typically speak ill of former staff or former consultants, but a lot of the problems we're having with this park now is because of the design and the execution. So what I would be proposing is that we look at replacing the safety surface with something to continue to keep the park universally accessible. In addition, the park has a lighting system which doesn't function, which was not addressed in the 2013 renovation, and it has decorative walls and stones that were not addressed in the 2013 renovation that are required for tough pointing. So my honest concern is that we're going to find ourselves in a year or two with a total failure of the port in place and having to replace this safety surface in a playground that is 8 years away from being demolished. So that's why I'm recommending that we pursue replacing the port in place now. So we have this product, we have it out there looking good, we have it out there functioning well. We make those functional changes to the site to make sure that it will actually work and be easy to maintain and be maintained well versus having the product fail. So when I talk about a port in place failure, what I mean is a total delamination of the wear layer. So basically what you get with port in place is you have like these fibers that are glued together and then a smooth layer on top. So that layer, based on our installation and the poor quality of the installation, can actually delaminate and whole sheets of the port in place come off. That's not unique to Friends Park. A lot of parks in that generation of port in place have experienced that. We've taken significant steps in our other by specifically specifying products and not allowing the contractors to use the cheap stuff to avoid this happening at West, for example, or Duke. But that's my big concern is that we've sanded off the wear layer based on all the different surfaces that are out there and that we really need to take a look at this site before there's a fence around the park because we've had a major failure. So I've kind of stated my position on it. Is there any specific questions, concerns?
I have one that I don't know if you've answered this. I don't think so. And please help my layman understanding of this get a little bit more in line with what it should be. If you replace the pour in place completely, like if we were to do that, and I know you say we're going to have to redo this whole park in 8 years, why can't we use the pour in place that we have and put in new park facilities on top of that?
That's a good question. So basically, pour in place isn't just rubber to be smooth. It has to meet a certain fall attenuation standard. So basically, the CPSI code, which is Consumer Protection Safety, they say that the safety surface has to be so springy based on different heights that you fall from. So let's say, for example, it's easier to understand with wood chips. If you've got a slide that you can jump off of that is 10 feet off the ground, you have to have 16 inches of wood chips. If you have a slide that you can jump off of that's 4 feet off the ground, you can have 8 inches of wood chips.
Okay.
So that port in place has to be compressed. So the way port in place is meant to be installed is over a hard surface. So what we do is we install it over concrete. What was done here at West is it's installed over stone. What you're going to find is that a new installer isn't going to come out and install a new port in place on top of an old one and give you any kind of a warranty. So I don't necessarily think that that's something that we're going to find somebody to do for us, unfortunately.
Well, sorry, I think maybe I'm not asking the right question. If we were to replace the entire pour in place in 2 or 3 years, right, that meets all the standards that it meets, why can't we just put new equipment on top of that to replace the current equipment that we have there?
We right? could.
We'd have a new slide where the old slide was.
I mean, I would say that we would end up with a total park redesign. We wouldn't, like, put new components on old posts and things like that. Like, that they don't really work like puzzle pieces like that. But, I mean, so Friends Park, as it sits today, if we went out to market, is probably between a $700,000 to $850,000 playground. I think where it would need to be to meet what the users expect and the kind of the back of the house stuff that we need, probably closer to $1 million. So if we say, okay, well, we want to replace this whole playground in 3 years, plenty of communities do that with parks in the center of town. They replace them in 10 to 12 years. Then that's definitely a thought, Commissioner.
I think he means if some years ago, would we have to replace one of the playgrounds for instructors, can't we just lift that up and put a new one right there and not touch the pour in place?
No,
I don't think that's a fact because of the footings.
Yeah,
the footings.
A structure like we have at Friends Park probably has a footing underneath it that's as big as an F-250 pickup truck. So to lift that structure out of the ground, you have to remove the pour in place, remove the gravel, and then remove that concrete under the ground.
Okay. It's not modular.
No, it's not modular. That's a good question.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I have the same question, so thank you for asking that. Also, you mentioned the sand in this memo. So is the sand a factor, and would the sand come back, or would the sand go away?
I'll tell you, sand is a fun element at a certain type of a park. And in this particular location, I think the sandbox directly located next to the drinking fountain and next to the port in place is probably not the best thing for this park. I mean, a sandbox is great at Shelton Park. But I think there's so much going on at this site. I can't see recommending sand if we return to port in place without experiencing the same challenge.
Also, takeoff is not accessible?
It would be hard to qualify the play pieces as universally accessible. You can't wheel up to the play structure out of a wheelchair. They're not ramped.
So, for example, Stephanie, at Friends Park, that's the only playground that we have where a wheelchair can go and get onto a piece and move back and forth just and be with able-bodied children. So that's the only one we have like that. Takeoff does not do that. So wheelchair can't go and experience play with their counterparts on a swing. This one can. It also has a special swing in the swing phase also for children with special abilities. So that's what you look for, is able body and disabled children to play equally side by side. And Friends is our true example of that. And that was a really important, I came, as Chris indicated, towards the very late end of the project. It really was already out to bid and the board just had to approve it. But I remember reading the notes and looking back at it, and being University of Southwell was very important to the community and the board at that time, and having a piece of equipment that a wheelchair could go on and swing with their brother or sister. We had someone in that neighborhood who had a child in a wheelchair, was very important to them. So that's really only part that we have for that age group that accomplished that goal.
You know, Lisa, I think everybody's heart was in the right place. They had to squeeze the buck to get the job done, and they did that by putting us in the position of having to replace that safety surface now halfway through the life of the playground. Yeah.
I think they were so excited to finally have a new playground that was different than all the other ones. They wanted to put everything into it. And sometimes, like we always remind you, is that you have to do the non-sexy things. I know people hate when I say that, but you have to do that infrastructure improvement in order to have things last. I think the excitement was more in let's get the equipment in there than more in how long it would last at that point. Designed by committee as opposed to, you know, really high quality design firm.
Stephanie, was that it? I had a comment.
Well, there was repairs made this year, correct?
Correct.
And those are holding right now?
Yes, they are.
So my question is, if we get the grant, this was put on year 3. If we don't get the grant, it's put on year 2. I don't know if you want us to discuss this now. I mean, personally, I'd rather see this in like year 4, but at least at minimum year 3. I think there's other things that the community has been asking for, but I'd rather see in year two, is my.
I'm going to be brutally honest with you, Stephanie. If we can make it last 2 years, we probably will. But what we're worried about is happening what happened before, and that's a catastrophic failure. We had to put a caution tape or fence around it for almost a year, and no one could use it. And this is such a high-profile playground that is used. Obviously, you can see by the wear and tear of this equipment at such a high rate. That we really can't take a chance that this playground's down for a year and not available for the community. So if we can take it last to year 3 or last to year 4 with the improvements we already made, we'll do that. We just don't think that will happen based on our professional opinion.
Okay, Stephanie, if you're done, I had a couple of comments. How much should we pay, just ballpark, for that repair?
$7,500.
Okay. And, you know, the obvious follow-up question is, the only thing I'm trying to wrap my head around is lifespan. We're considering doing a port in place the right way. So we're doing concrete curbing and a better quality product and everything. But we don't really need the best, we just need something that's going to last 8 years until all the equipment's going to go, because then all of that's going to have to be changed because the fall zones change and all the, you know, as you've already stated. So is there anything that we could do that could like slice this down the middle and not do the really good, well done surface, but just something that's going to carry us through until the whole park is redone?
That's a good question, Commissioner. I mean, my thought was that we could definitely explore the playground grass like we used to take it. That's a lower cost product than port in place in particular. The other thing that we've looked at is, you know, could we bring in the engineered wood fiber chips? And my concern with that is that I don't think we're going to have the depth to have the proper amount of chips at the site to provide the fall attenuation, as well as there's significant grade changes. So when you walk into the park, you like walk up to on a ramp onto the playground, and the port in place kind of carries up the side of that ramp. So it might, we would lose the universal accessibility component with chips. I mean, we would lose that. We would lose that 1-in-3 ratio across our inventory. The other thing that I think we have to keep in the back of our mind is we'd like to replace it in 2031. We just have no idea what our finances or what our projects are going to look like we could be talking about a playground that has to be there for 20 more years.
In addition, if we're replacing the curbing and everything like that, we could leave that curbing. That would last much longer, and just do the new footprint, the new playground in the same footprint. So when you're looking at that, like the 100 and whatever, that it might be not be that much. You might not have to do all the curbing and stuff, which is very expensive. But, and I think Lisa's question also is, Chris, is can't we just keep on going and patching
you know,
it? And can you explain
that's a,
why?
That's a good question.
That's not
and, you know, it's something that I've considered with my team. You know, we've looked at a lot of it. You know, I have a colleague that was doing that in another district, and they experienced the total failure. And what ended up happening was that they had a frost-off cycle, and they lost about 40% of the wear layer on the port in place. So I would say that the patches are never as good as the original installation. It's like a patch tire on your car. If you're on a road trip and you blow a tire and you get a patch, it's not something that you want to drive to California on. It's something that you want it to get over the hump until you can get it fixed properly. So, I mean, I would be inclined to say that patches are more of a temporary, you know, let's get this safe so nobody gets hurt while we develop a long-term plan. Because anywhere that you cut the port in place, you create a point of failure. So that's one of the biggest challenges with that playground is there's that railroad track that circles the whole playground. Those are all cut in. I honestly, I've never seen anything like that. Like, that's like taboo with port in place, like you would not even imagine. So, you know, I think that we got carried away with how something visually looked in a concept plan without really thinking, like, how can the contractor build this? So that's where anywhere that we're cutting it, we're really creating a point of failure down the line.
And if back then, I don't think they really knew that that would be a failure. That was something new that they were doing in design.
Right.
They're like, this is great. And then, you know, just like something 7 years later with new technology, they're like, oh, this is not standing up, and you don't see it done anymore.
Yeah.
I guess my last comment, I think, is that I'm still trying to get the years. You know, I know I would love to go to 2031 with this equipment, but you know that's probably not going to happen. That the equipment isn't going to fail in some time. So I'm still wrestling with doing the kind of job this staff is used to doing, which is really an exceptional job in doing these playgrounds, and creating this substrate for the playground equipment that could last much longer than the equipment itself. And so I'm still kind of wrestling with that. But also the other thing I was thinking is we've lost because of some unfortunate choices in equipment that this staff had nothing to do with, so this isn't directed to you. Unfortunately, we had to get rid of some pieces of equipment. Now we're considering, for really good reason, as Steph brought up, getting rid of the sand feature. It almost feels like we're reducing the play functionality of the playground just so we can have this surface on the ground. I mean, it's not like
you put a play feature in where the sand is. I mean, it's something that we looked at maybe doing a xylophone, something like that. I mean, I think that if there's a legitimate dialogue about moving up the replacement date, I think that if we say, okay, well, we want to think about replacing this playground in 5 years, I think that's a very different story than 11 years. Because there's getting you over on a bridge to something, and then there's, you know, this has to last 11 years. Because what we have out there is not going to last 5 years. So I
think the court in place.
Correct.
Right.
So if we're along the mindset of, you know, this is one of the district's, you know, primary locations, and we have to plan to replace this in 5 years, I think that's a little bit different story. Lisa, correct me if I'm...
Well, yeah, but that's a 750 to replace it in kind, like it is
that's
now.
That's a million-dollar project.
That's a million-dollar project. So we're talking that playgrounds last now with the kind of playground equipment we have there, like 20, 25 years. So it can last anywhere from 11 to 18 years. So can you honestly say in 5 years, if you don't do this, you're going to place another $1 million? I don't see it in our capital projects budget 5 years replacing this whole park. I just don't see it for $1 million.
Right.
No, I agree with that too, but you guys have not talked very confidently about the equipment at this park in the past. So it is a little concerning that, you know, this isn't going to last, you know. This isn't one of those places that you could say this equipment's going to last 20, 25 years. You've told us in the past, you know, it's hard to get replacement parts. These are not companies that you would be comfortable using. So, you know, it is something to think about in terms of if that port in place can't be used for new equipment, you know, I think it's a kind of a conundrum. It's not a decision to just say, you know, that's a large amount of money to spend on a surface that won't be reused if there's new equipment.
That's a really good point. I want to make note that, unfortunately, this playground had like 3 or 4 different manufacturers in, and some of the pieces that we were really concerned about have already failed and are out of there. Chris, correct me if I'm wrong. What is the major?
Yeah. So what we have remaining is the pirate ship is a structure done by Landscape Structures, which is what we use all the time, and the other large structure is a structure done by Reese Recreation. I can't think of the brand. I think it's Play School is the brand. It's a competitor of Landscape Structures. It's not as good, but it's definitely not Compan or some of the other stuff that's out there. So, you know, to Lisa's point, we have removed play pieces. We removed the sprung toys. We removed the rock and cross. We've had to change out the swings and things like that. I mean, you know, this is definitely our heaviest use playground at this point. So, you know, it does get wear and tear on it like no other park does, like a school, very similar. We have different age demographics, different size kids on it. You could put a 75 or 80 pound kid on a piece of equipment designed for a 30 pound kid very easily. So it's taken a tremendous amount of wear and tear. So we're looking at it like, if we don't have $1 million to replace this park in 5 years, what do we do to make sure it's going to be there in 2031 and be safe? And that's kind of where we're coming from at the staff point is, you know, we're not in a position to have $1 million in 5 years that we know of for this park. So how do we extend the lifespan of that asset? I mean, Stephanie, I think to your point, this is not our wants list. This was the list that the board asked us to put together based on the limited funds that we had due to the COVID changes. This was to keep the lights on list. It's worth additional discussion in that regard.
I made some points here.
Go ahead.
First, Chris, I thought your original presentation was a tour de force here, and I expect to see a 6-part miniseries on HBO of hour-long specials. I think the question that we're talking here is a little bit different than what we've been discussing for the last 5 or 10 minutes. I think the concern here, as I understand it, is that we have a total failure of the existing surface, you know, let's call it 18 months to 4 years. And then if we haven't already replaced it or, you know, have a plan to replace it deeply, sort of in the pocket, we're going to have a park closure right in the middle of town. And it's going to look bad up until then, and then it's going to close, and it's just going to be a mess. And so, really, for me, what Chris seems to be saying is you got to replace it with something. And sooner is better because, you know, if you somehow manage to eke out 8 years, then you're going to spend a bunch of money on putting in a new surface 8 years from now that then you're going to have to rip out 4 or 5 or 6 years after that when the entire playground is done. And so you might as well replace it sooner and not have that total failure and have a nicer surface that's going to last the remaining life of the playground. I think a secondary question then is, do you want the platinum or the gold or the silver or the bronze solution when you... still discuss that as a board.
Yeah, go ahead, Dudley.
Okay. I'm trying to get up to date on the ADA regulations, and for Duke Park, will that meet the ADA requirements?
Duke Park will have a pour in place surface, but there's not universally accessible play equipment. It will be qualified as universally accessible, but it does not offer the play pieces like Friends does that you can access via a mobility device.
So it would meet perhaps the letter of the law, but not the intent.
Correct. All of our playgrounds are technically accessible that okay. we've built in the last 7-year cycle. Okay. But it's the level of accessibility that is varying based on the types of equipment and the surfacing.
So what I'm hearing from Commissioner Lutton is kind of an idea that we've tried to find a temporary solution for the, I don't know, something that goes over the poured in place or some other way we can manage that for a couple years and then revisit the situation?
No.
That's not what I intended to suggest.
Oh, okay. That's what I heard.
Josh was talking about, you know, he put it in terms of precious metals, platinum, gold, or silver. You know, must we do the most expensive fix? I believe that's what I had said previously. Is there some other solution we can have that's going to carry us safely and adequately? Is there something else?
That is a fair characterization of what I said, but I would just add that what I had previously said is, I think what Chris is saying is that we better do something in 2 to 4 years, because if we try and put it off, we are going to have a major failure at that park, and then it's going to be closed for a year.
I think Josh summed up what it took me about 30 minutes to say in 3 minutes. So,
I'll do the commercials, you do the mini-series.
Exactly. Okay. So, to your point, I mean, if the poured in place is the gold level standard and the synthetic grass is the silver and the engineered wood fiber is the bronze, you know, is there some mix? Is there a way to look at this and say, you know, can we use the poured in place where we have the slopes, and can we use the synthetic grass, which is 20% cheaper per square foot than the poured in place somewhere else? Does it make sense to use engineered wood fiber somewhere? I mean, I don't think that you can go in and say that it's a full wood chip playground. To sum up what you're saying, we have to do something. I would agree with that.
Well, it's not a full poured in place playground.
We're going to find that to do the poured in place and to do it right, we're going to have to put concrete banding in that we don't have. In that regard, we're going to end up spending money that we could spend on surfacing to finish out the playground and spend it on concrete that's going to have no play value to anyone. So if we have to spend $40,000 on concrete and we can finish out the playground with poured in place for $51,000, makes a lot more sense to do the whole thing in poured in place or synthetic turf and have that additional play value.
So the way that I'm seeing this, Chris, and I'm glad we're having this conversation, because I think I'm coming full circle to your point. I look at things like math problems. There's a bunch of unknowns here, but the expected outcome is that in 2 years something bad's going to happen, we're going to have a park to close. What is the most cost-effective way to maintain a flagship park in the center of town? And you're telling us that you've looked up, down, left, right, and the most cost-effective way to do that is to replace the pour in place in the next 18 months.
Correct.
Knowing that it may or may not fail on us, but the anticipation is that it's going to fail. And so I'm fine with it. Look, I live probably closest to that park than anybody here. I walk by there every night. It is packed. Kids, middle school kids, jump all over every single surface, whether it's the top surface of the treehouse to, you know, standing on top of the accessible swing. The thing gets used by everybody of every age. So I'm personally, I think it's something that's worth putting money in and doing right the first time. The longer that we can have the actual equipment above it last, I think the better. And it sounds like getting the surface done right is going to actually probably help us with that as well. So I love all the questions. questions here, and I appreciate the hard work you guys put into it. I do actually recommend you guys remove the trash more frequently, but other than that, I think it's probably one of the best parks that we have.
Okay, well, we've had a lot of people summarizing what you said, Chris. I understood you perfectly well the first time. I agree. Is there any truth to Michael's thought that redoing the surface is going to somehow increase the lifespan of the equipment? And also, just to kind of final, maybe I didn't get it, but is there any possibility that you started talking, Chris, about different pieces of equipment, but Stephanie's question was, really, there doesn't seem to be a lot of confidence in some of the pieces there. What can we expect as we go forward, you know, 8 years out?
So I think that's a good question, Lisa. You know, every project that we have, we start off with a budget number that's a placeholder. And we start digging into the project, and we get the professionals on board, and we bring the engineers in, and we bring the playground companies in, and, you know, we find things. And sometimes we find that we're in better shape than we thought, and sometimes we find that we're in worse shape than we thought. I think that 325 gives us a little bit of flexibility. I mean, if we're looking at the park, I don't think we have the budget to replace everything or to replace the large structures. But if we say, okay, well, we think that this piece isn't going to make 10 years, we want to look at it, I definitely think that's something that we need to come back to the board with. I mean, I created that budget based on a square foot calculation on what we paid for Port in Place at West and what we paid for the masonry work to the walls at Berlin Field. That was where that budget number came from. So that was kind of where I started to craft that, and I created an allowance to get the electrical system either working or to remove it, one or the other. So that was where we formulated that budget. I think as we continue to dive into it, if the board feels really strongly that there's a piece that just doesn't fit, saying, you know, let's look at this one piece, but I just don't think that budget's going to support a wholesale renovation, but there could be some opportunity for flexibility there.
So, Lisa, what would you like us to, how would you like us to direct you going forward? Should we ask you to look into more than one option for the surface to kind of give us an idea of the most expensive and something less expensive? Should we ask you to consider replace or addition of pieces to make up for the ones we've lost and getting rid of the sand? What would you like us, what do you need to know?
Lisa, we can't hear you.
No, not, it's like phased in and out.
Kind of.
Can you call in?
No.
Say something.
Sounds like she's underwater.
Underwater basket weaving, huh?
Very, very faint.
Stephanie, who joined you?
This is my son. This is Murphy.
Hey, Murphy.
You say hi to Lisa? Daddy's out of town on business, so I'm mommying by myself. So,
oh.
Frozen is on to keep him entertained, and you guys are on to keep me entertained.
I'm not entertained.
Oh. I'm not entertained.
Oh, not entertained.
Can I take a second to off the record, not off the record, it's on the record, say something to you, Stephanie. I ran into Heather Olson, and she has been singing the praises. It's only been 2 or 3 days, but said that the program's working out really, really well.
Good, I'm glad.
And I know Ms. Tolzine is sending her kids there in a little bit, too. So you guys, you and Adam and whoever else have been involved, you know, as a parent of kids in District 35, it means a lot to us that you guys have been helping out to let the kids go back to school.
It's very fun.
Appreciate
it. And the staff. Yeah, there's been a couple bumps, I'm not going to lie. die, but it's back up, a lot of fun.
It's been really good, even like to the point where I guess you guys are looking at additional crafts for when the students have downtime and things like that. It's I think nothing connects us more to the rest of the community than the way that we help each other out. So between the boards, so great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well said, Michael.
All right.
Okay, Lisa, you're going to tell us what you need.
Okay. Okay, so what we're doing is we're going to go to our capital project. We have to approve year two and three. So we don't have to approve anything with the project right now. That's just a placeholder of the money. And as we go back and approve friends and say year two, we'll come back to you with the design elements at that time. And you can either lower the amount or up the amount at that time.
Okay. Should we just get a quick survey of everybody?
So do you want to, Chris, do you want to put up the agenda items where it says what are tier two and three projects?
Trevor, can you turn the volume on your computer all the way down?
Okay.
Thank you.
So if you see here, we have the recommended what year two and three projects are. Can you scroll down a little bit, Chris?
Yeah, so this represents not getting the park grant.
So this is without the getting the park grant. So if we get the park grant, obviously this lineup would change. But let's go with the assumption that we're not going to get the park grant. This is what we're recommending for year two projects, year three projects. Keeping in mind the projects that are not scheduled within 3 years, next year we'll come back and we'll start planning for the year after that. So we'll plan for 2024 and 25 at that time. So just because those not scheduled projects within 3 years aren't on the list, that means we're not just getting rid of those. They come up after year four, five, six, and seven. So is there any discussion about those year two and three projects?
I have something I'd like to bring up.
Go ahead, Terry.
Sure.
Okay, on year two, we have Shelton Parkway drainage. It's a tough issue for me, but I think there is a tendency to look at hard engineering for that area. I'm one of my client communities, Park Forest, had a similar issue, and they used a green approach that was much, much less expensive for dealing with low swampy areas. In their case, they simply stopped cutting the grass and did a couple other minor things and decided that they would live with almost like a large rain garden in the area. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't make any attention there, but it was cost much, much less than a lot of engineering improvements and hard public infrastructure for that area. So as we get into that area, it'd be helpful to talk to someone or a landscape architecture firm that does the green engineering. More and more we're seeing the landscape architects and some of the more progressive engineering firms working together and coming with these non-structural solutions. So just wanted to go on the record on that. That also is another item farther down the list for dealing with other green spaces that I don't think we have to necessarily go that route with hard engineering. Okay.
Dudley, you're exactly right, and I know we brought this up in prior meetings, that dollar amount is a placeholder. So if we come back and the board decides after we investigate, do community input, talk to the neighbors, do everything, and if we end up that the solution is much cheaper and more of a green solution and the board approves that approach, that's great. Then we'll spend less money, and then that money that we have saved will go into year four or five.
but we have not done any engineering studies yet. This, again, this is just an estimate. We have not talked to the neighbors about their expectations, how they would feel if we just let it go and you know, just did the green approach. So we're putting in the worst-case scenario, we feel, for that item, and then as we, again, go through the whole planning process, these are all just estimates. And they still have to be vetted through a committee approach as we go down through each project. So we just put that for now, and then as we investigate what we can do in there, that may change considerably. Chris, do you agree on that?
I do, and I to Dudley's point, I think there are definitely parks where landscaping and green infrastructure is the solution, and then there's some parks where it may not be the solution. And I think that's the whole process of saying, you know, what's the best use of our money, what's the best result for the community, and I think we have to study it. But as we know, studies cost money.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that got on the record as you know, we go forward, that that's one of the things that we're going to need to look into.
Yep, it's definitely on the
record. And also being a representative to the Sustainability Committee, you know, I have to wave that flag as well.
Yep, you've noted that before, and that's definitely noted, and we'll put it, we'll make sure it's in the files when we start doing those things to look at all that. And as I'm sure you'll bring it up at that point, too. So.
Okay.
I have a quick question, Lisa and Chris. The priority for the Shelton drainage, I was kind of surprised to see it when I started really thinking about it, one, but lights on the field down to the second year. Can you just flesh out a little bit what the priority of the drainage at Shelton, obviously it's a little less expensive, over the lights on that field, which I know have been a problem for quite a while.
Good question. So the lights are currently working, sort of. So the reason that we put the lights off is because it's a bigger project, because the lights have to be configured to what the field is going to be. So if we decide we're going to be a multi-use field that's baseball, soccer, lacrosse, whatever it is, we have to really put a pin in what Take-It Field is going to become, because right now there's not a lot of softball going on out here. So it's a little bit bigger of a project. The reason that I prioritized Shelton over the lights is honestly because the trees are dying in Shelton Park. And so I'm at a point where I can't get the water out of that park, and we're losing our tree inventory there. So we have to come up with a solution, or we're going to end up with a soggy field.
Thank you. Got it.
Is there a reason for that asterisk on the Shelton Park drainage, or is that just a vestigial?
Yes, that's because there's lots of different ways to look at it. The asterisk carries other elements to the project, like we're going to look at drainage, but that's also a good time to resurface the park pathway, or maybe the answer is moving the park pathway to high ground instead of the low ground it is. So that's more just to initiate conversation about the drainage than it is to say this is something special.
Okay,
so we have, are there any other questions about the other items in these years?
I still want to reiterate my opinion, or my, I don't know what to call it. It's not a goal opinion, I don't know. I know no one else agrees with me, but we've done a lot of playgrounds. We have beautiful playgrounds, and I still like to see other priorities replace that and push down, like lakefront, you know, and we're not doing any of the fields, and we've been talking about it, people have been asking for it, so that's still how I feel. I'd like to see something move to year three, and to move something up that is a different segment that we're hitting.
I'm sorry, Stephanie, could you clarify that? What would you?
I'd like to see, you know, we're not improving any of our fields.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering, you know, we've done a lot of playgrounds. You guys know I love playgrounds. So you're probably surprised to hear me say this, but we've done a lot of playgrounds. We're doing another beautiful playground. You know, we're, but we have, can we move something up and move a playground down and do a field, you know, improve a field so that we hit that segment? Because all of those are out of the year three. They're all at the bottom, pretty much. Pony baseball. I mean, that field is, you know, has a lot of...
Take-up is in year three, so that's our major field, so that's in year three. I guess what you would have to say is if we took out Lakefront Playground or Take-Up, you would have to be prepared for those to be taken down in the area the playground shut down. So that would be the board's call. That it's not something we recommend, but that's what would happen is if we don't prioritize those, there's a chance that they would fail. Where a field doesn't necessarily fail. We might have to take out a dugout or a bench or whatever, but they can still play on the field. Where if Lakefront Playground or Friends Park fails, we have to close those to use. Chris, would you agree?
I would agree. I mean, because at the end of the day, if the lights stop working, the field can still be used during the day.
Okay, so I'll just kind of, Michael, do you want to wrap up your comments or just if you have anything else or let us know how you feel about the plan?
I think the plan makes a lot of sense. If we had enough people, I'd do everything in year one. But I understand there's resource constraints. But to Stephanie's question here, where... I thought I saw the pony field, the west field somewhere on this list.
It's not scheduled within 3 years. It's on the bottom.
It's on the bottom, okay.
It'll be listed 4 years. So we have take-up field scheduled in year three, which is a higher priority field, more usage, and then we have west in after 3 years, so 4 or 5.
No, I mean, look, I appreciate the thoroughness of the board. I echo Stephanie for Commissioner Boren's thoughts as well. I mean, I do think we're putting a lot into playgrounds. I also think fields don't need as much TLC in general as playgrounds do. They do need a lot of TLC, but you know, it sounds like a playground probably need a little bit more. And quite frankly, the only playgrounds that you see on here are the ones that are, you know, sort of in dire need. Friends, Lakefront, and obviously the new Duke. But no, I think this is a reasonable way to tackle the challenges we're having.
Okay, thank you, Michael.
I mean, the one thing I could say is that if we could probably move up take-up softball field soccer into year two, it'd be more of a drain on Chris. And then we would just, if Friends and Lakefront were still holding up, we would just move down to year three. We could play that game with it. But we do want to have some more discussion on take-up softball to whether we should make it a multi-use field and things like that. So that'll take a little more community discussion. But it wouldn't be the end of the world if we moved that up to year two.
I think it's important to note, Lisa, that we're doing the planning for year three projects in year two. So we would, if we said we're going to move up, take a field into year two, we're literally going to be talking about that project in 15 months. So time flies when you're in the planning cycle. You seem like you did talk about it the first time, and then you're breaking ground, and it's 2 years later. So, I mean, to Lisa's point, I think that, you know, we definitely have some duplication in the infrastructure with the Lakefront Playground. I mean, if that playground had to be removed, there are other playgrounds to go to in the area. I mean, I can see the point there. I think it could be worth some additional discussion.
Josh?
I think overall it's a thoughtful, well-balanced approach. I do think that losing either Friends or Lakefront would be pretty disastrous given where they are in town. I would point out that although it's not a field, the Lakefront Tennis is conceptually similar. It's a, you know, an athletic amenity for adults and to some extent kids. I guess I'm supportive of this plan overall.
Thank you. How about you, Dudley?
I've come to realize that this is an overall guide and it's going to be flexible, be revisited every year.
I just want to make sure that we stress value in our purchases and a competitive bidding environment. And I think overall this covers and provides some overall directions. I wanted to say that I think the overall reason for doing this is not necessarily to get down into the weeds, but to provide a path for us for thinking about the future capital expenses for the Park District.
Thank you, Dudley. And I will just sort of sum up by saying my objective would be to encourage Chris, as I know you will anyway, to think of the most cost-effective way of solving our friend's dilemma, rather than move it because I'm convinced that you are, it is your strong opinion that moving it forward, kicking it down the years is not necessarily the best thing to do. So I understand its position in first year. So just, you know, consider other options in terms of cost. And I would say it is a well-considered plan. You folks did great. You certainly provided us with all sorts of evidence for your position, and I appreciate that. So, Lisa, does that kind of sum it up fairly for you?
Yeah, so pretty much you're saying you approved of this plan for year two and three, and this is if we do not get the park grant, that you're approving us to move forward with this with consideration to keep cost value in mind, and look, and when we bring the different design elements, we'll talk further with the board.
Yes.
Okay, so let's move to Chris. Can we go to the next one? If we do get the park grant, the change, I just want to make the board aware of that, so that we're all on the same page. What happens if we do get the park grant? So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Hopefully the park grants will be announced in January. So if they're announced and we receive a park grant, at that point it's probably going to take 4 months for the state to send us the paperwork with the signature on it. So we're going to likely have to start planning an actual project almost immediately to make construction in fiscal year 22. We have to have all the cash on hand and based on the way the grant is currently structured, be the bank on the project, and they reimburse us afterwards. So we'd have to have that $4 million that we're budgeted to do that project basically in a bank account for us available to use. And then we would be reimbursed upon successful completion of the project. So it could definitely delay our long-term plans throughout the whole district based on how much our reserve is and what we're doing in year one. But I think that having that additional facility and capturing that grant money is worth taking the risk on some of the other areas as far as pushing playgrounds and parks off another year. But I would certainly be willing to talk about any of the items on here. You know, you'll see that we created a year four and included the Take-It Field lights, while the Take-It Field itself is not included. I'm more concerned about the field lights continuing to work as far as, being up there on wood poles than I am about the actual backstop itself. I mean, we have been able, to Michael's point, to make some operational improvements to keep the field safe for recreational play, but fixing those lights and keeping those poles from running out is just outside the scope of what my team can accomplish.
Okay, any comments?
Okay.
All right.
I would just, the only comment I would have is on the take of lights and softball field, not to belabor the point, but to the extent that the board and next year or the year after can find a way to do some planning so that we know we're putting in lights that make sense for the field that we're going to have, whether it's updated that year or the following year. Yeah, please do that.
You know, Lisa, does it make sense once we know the results of the park grant process if we want to come back and just kind of revisit the dialogue about Take It Field at that point?
We definitely will do that. But Josh makes a great point that if we decide to put lights in before the fields are done, we'll do so in the planning purpose to make sure they're adequate and not have to be moved should the appeal have to be done. So that's
important to note that this plan only takes into account cash we currently have on hand in the bond issuance. We'll hopefully be in a very different fiscal world in 2 years than we are today. But again, this was just kind of that worst case scenario. Here's what we've got in the piggy bank. Bobby's going to make a ton of money next year. Don't worry.
Everybody's doing a really good job with COVID, let me tell you. So, you know.
I had a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Dudley.
Sure. Question that I had. The replacement of the dasher boards, that doesn't get in the way for future work we're going to have to do on the ice, does it? I mean, you can do those independently?
That's correct, Dudley.
Okay.
Okay. Chris, I just want to point out, if this is the worst case scenario, then we should count ourselves lucky.
Right?
Yes.
You're right.
Yeah, $8 million, $8.5 million in park projects, to be able to plan that during a pandemic really speaks to the commitment and the fiscal stewardship here.
Yeah, I would say that's true. All righty then.
Okay. So, from what I saw before, they like that. From the board perspective, they also like this plan, and so the park, the staff will move forward on this planning project. And this does not have to take up. We don't have to take official action. It's a consent of the board to go forward with this, and then each project will be brought back to you as we go.
Okay. We have consensus on that.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Very good.
Thank you.
Okay. Very good. If it's okay, we will move on to the verbal update on programs and facilities operations. Lisa Shepherd, Bobby, and Chris will lead that discussion.
All right. I'm going to throw it over to, where's Bobby? Bobby, to talk about some of our park, our recreation and facilities, everything that we're doing during the pandemic. It's been very impressive what the rec facility teams have, and in conjunction with the business service and parks team, have been able to do last couple months. So, Bobby, throw it over to you.
Absolutely. Busy couple of weeks, busy couple of months during the summer here. As you know, with being at the start of school this week with the start of programming, we just had announced that it was the hottest summer on record in Chicago. And clearly the beach has been extremely popular. So we've actually had 46,000 visits to the beach this year. Last year we had 23,000 visits, and the year before was 29,000 visits. So average, we're getting about 462 people to the beach each day, all pass holders. And in comparison, we had 5,600 pass holder visits last year. So, you know, a multiple. So anyone who's bought a pass really has got great value of their beach pass. And I think the feedback from all beach pass holders we've talked to has been very positive. So as you know, the beach will remain open on those nice days through the end of the 27th of September. Days like today, we were open in the morning, but we closed once the weather deteriorated and the storms came through to make sure we were being fiscally responsible. So we'll continue to watch that as the fall goes on. We had a really great movie in the park last week for anyone we had Back to the Future. It was really fun to see everyone a social distance out on Berlin Field. It was one of the most pleasant evenings of the summer, so that was fun. Kids Club camps, the enrichment camps, the AM and PM elements also started, as you know, on Monday, and we have the teacher program, which started on Monday, which is a great resource to the teachers of District 35, and if they do go backwards with their personal kids' schools, we have that option where we'll probably see some more enrollment in that, but that has been going well. We have 20 children enrolled in the morning enrichment camp and 44 in the afternoon. So it's been busy times at Watts. Thank you to Chris and Carol for getting all the Wi-Fi upgraded, getting all sorts of networking issues solved in a very short time period. So that's been working well. Stephanie and her team, as everyone was saying, is just killing it. The countless amounts of hours her and her team have put in. Adam and Shannon have since the start of the summer, had 1,500 enrollments in outdoor programming this fall. So that is another phenomenal statistic, over $180,000 in revenue for those programs. And then on another good piece of news, daycare just got a grant for the state from Illinois for child restoration grant of $107,325. So we got a check for that this week, which will go a long way to helping the operation of the program. So Jess single-handedly got that all done while she was also rolling out all of her programming. So we've had a really great summer, a lot of positive momentum. We're hoping to continue that on through the fall. But very proud of the team and everybody at the district and what they've done in this difficult time. Does anyone have any questions on any of the recreation or facilities elements of the district?
Can you clarify, is that grant from the emergency childcare or was that for something else?
So it was related to what's called a child care restoration grant through the state of Illinois. It was related to expenses for June, July, and August because the state changed they mandated that you would reduce your capacity in each classroom by 30%. So they created a subsidy district and child care facilities that had extra costs is related to. They've also suggested that there may be additional monies available for September and October, but we'll see if that comes to fruition in the future. But they've suggested that there may be similar monies available in the future. So it's not got to do with opening in May for the emergency daycare. It was more us getting back to our regular daycare for June, July, and August.
I know you can't really compare enrollment because it's such a different year, but you know, is it similar? I mean, like, what's our, how many households enrolled? Do you have any of that? I'm just curious as to how many people are signing up for things.
In general, it's definitely not what it used to be because our capacity is reduced, but we're definitely seeing demand for programming. For ceramics, for example, has one class has 8 people on the wait list. So we have reduced capacity, and we're trying our best to find a time which we can run that class, but it turns out that pretty much there's no time available during the week. It would have to be on a weekend. Traditionally, this community hasn't wanted to do too much programming on the weekends. So we're seeing our core groups coming back, and we're seeing people who are just not interested in coming back at this point. But we're definitely seeing demands.
Yeah, I mean, I had programs on a wait list that we signed up for, so I know it seems like certain things are definitely high demand, and then you get to enough one.
We'll do a more comprehensive report at the board meeting. This is just for, like, to update you just briefly on, you know, some of the things that have changed last time. So more of that data and information you're asking for, we'll have that as usual in our board packet in September. But the team has been working really hard to get this e-learning camp up and running. There's a lot of different variables, and I have to say, District 35, Catherine Wang and her team have been extremely helpful. The partnership, the strong partnership we have with them, is really showing through this program. So she's available to answer any questions. We're able to help them, which they're very appreciative of. The District 35 teacher program, that is being subsidized by the school district, so it won't be at any of loss to the Park District to operate that program. So they're guaranteeing that whatever cost we have, they're going to reimburse us, subsidizing a little bit for the teachers too. So it's a great program that we're working with them. And then they're just really, parents are really appreciative with the e-learning camp. So we're really providing an essential service, a need for the community, for those parents that have to get to work or are working from home and just can't with children. So it's not easy, everything you have to juggle with that, so they've been doing a phenomenal job with that. And same with the outside programming. If you ever seen any of them, it's just amazing. They're rowing outside, you walk around, you see a different program. So very creative, out-of-the-box thinking, very nimble, very able to pivot on the dime, because as we all know, the regulations change. Thank God it's about weekly, not daily. But we're trying our best to provide the needed services that the community wants. So kudos to the team and everything they're doing with that. So and same with the business service team, working through with the recreation team and how to do all the billing and how to get all everything, infrastructure we need to make that happen. So they're killing it too. So kudos to them. We plan to have a more in-depth discussion about how Beach will operate next year in either November or December. We got to get through this season. Probably in the, we know in the October committee meeting we want to have a detailed discussion with you regarding WASP, so how that will operate as we look at all the regulations regarding outdoor ice skating and such. So we're developing currently a plan for that. We'll continue to bring that to you for discussion on those programs. Any questions?
One for Bobby. Bobby, okay. Are you planning to kind of rev up the Watts Advisory Committee for a Zoom meeting preseason? Any thoughts on that?
Good question. We have discussed that. We discussed that with the Beach Advisory too. We're not quite sure if that would add any value before we talk to the board about the plan. With a lot of what's going on, a lot of it is hurry up and wait. When you make decisions, things change, so you have to be very, very nimble. And sometimes when you involve some of the committees, it can lock you into things that you have to be willing to change and to adapt. So as of right now, at least I don't know if you have any opinions on it, but I don't know if we're necessarily going to involve the WASP committee any of the opening plans, same way we didn't for the Beach Advisory.
Exactly, that's the plan, because it is changing, and you know we have to read really deep into the DCAO guidelines, and the lay public is not doing that. So we know there's certain things that we can't do that maybe everybody would want us to do, and we just aren't able to because of the regulations. So so we'll play it by ear and see how it's going, see if the regulations are changing too much, and we can do a meeting after we make recommendations to the board. So.
Okay, thank you.
Chris, do you want to give a brief update on the Connect Glencoe Trail and Duke Park?
Brief, right?
Brief. Chris, brief.
Yeah, I've talked enough. The projects are full steam ahead. Duke is, we got sidewalks going in, curbs, playground equipment, things of that nature. The trail itself, we've kicked it off with IDOT. If you drive by now, you'll see all the signage in place. You'll see the trail markers laid out. The post is actually the center line of where our new trail will be. So we've got that post laid out so we can go out there and trim up any trees that we have in the way, just to make sure that the equipment that they're excavating the trail with doesn't bump into anything. So the projects are moving ahead. We are expecting our first disbursement from the IDNR of our OSLAD monies in September. So that'll be very exciting to receive that up front. So overall, very pleased with the projects, very pleased with the contractors, the consultants. So far, knock on wood, things have been going according to plan.
We sent out letters to all the neighborhoods, again, reminding them about the project. Sometimes people forget because all of a sudden, you know, you as a board approve a project, and then it takes a good 6-9 months to actually see a feet on the ground, so people forget that actually that was approved and we're going ahead with that. So we sent a letter out to the neighborhood. There's signs up on the fence poles. And then Jenny and Aaron have been working very hard on a donation aspect of that. As you recall, we approved some of those social spaces and benches. So they made a really great sign. If you're a take-up, or it'll eventually be posted outside, I'm sure, about different donations. Aaron, it is?
It is. I drove by today. It's up.
Okay, this is another one here. About the sponsor or donation opportunities, I know Jenny's been getting quite a few calls on that already for either bunches or the social spaces and things like that. So we were trying to generate some revenue on some of those sponsorship items. So.
In addition to the trail, we do have the Schumann Overlook and Retaining Wall projects kicking off in September, so we will have a mailer that goes out to neighbors and communication that goes out to the beach pass holders here shortly. So what we've done with the mailers is we've mailed a letter directly addressed to the individual of any home that's project adjacent, and then we've also handed out letters in the neighborhood too, so we're certain that the people who live next to the park have gotten a communication. So that's kind of we've adopted the communicate and communicate often take on these projects. So far it's been very successful, got a lot of positive feedback, a lot of questions. Thank you.
Carol, do you have anything? anything? Because I don't want to leave you out. I just didn't know, you know.
No, other than just to report that Moody's affirmed our AAA bond rating, which will help in the issuance of our bonds. The board will have on its agenda to pass the official bond ordinance at the regular September meeting, but we were very pleased, and it just confirms the whole total team GPD is definitely something to be proud of. So congrats to all of you.
Thank you, Carol.
Any questions on recreation, parks, or facilities?
I just wanted to say hello.
Yep, we got you, Dudley.
You got me? Okay. I just wanted to say what a fantastic job. I've heard from a number of residents about our park district and the kinds of things that we're doing, both in terms of the physical improvements and especially recently the how nimble we've been with the programming and working with the school district. I think that was terrific. I know it's a lot of work on both sides, and just want to thank you for that.
Thank you, Dudley.
Okay. So, oh, and by the way, Bobby, the water is gorgeous. So thank you. It is highly swimmable.
Welcome.
I suggest anyone who likes to go in the water get to the beach and start swimming because it feels so good, really. And your staff, that I know you trained these young people very quickly, and they're all so professional and so nice. So kind, say hello, goodbye to everybody. It's just whatever training program you have in place, it's phenomenal.
Thank you. It's all Matt and his team. They're really, really great. So,
yes.
All them.
Good. Thank you. Okay, so if there's nothing more in that, Lisa Shepherd, would you please lead the discussion on the renaming of Park 7N?
Excellent. As has been our custom, the last 7 years, whenever we reactivate a park into a different purpose than just, you know, empty parkland, the park board considers renaming the park. Based on our policy, which I also included in the packet, we usually do name parks after, like, the natural features, park features, the names of areas such as the neighborhood, the major streets, etc. After consideration, the park is recommending that we rename Park 7N Ravine Bluffs Park after the neighborhood. Any questions? We would take formal action on this at the board meeting. So this is, we would discuss it now and then take formal action in September.
Okay, can we get a quick survey of commissioners? Dudley, start with you.
I think it's a great idea. I really like the naming. Hope we can coordinate that naming with the Historic Preservation Society, since they'll be taking up a big chunk of that park. No, it's a very small part of that park, actually. It's got a wonderful historical reference.
Okay, Josh?
Seems like a good choice.
Stephanie?
Yeah, great. I like the idea.
And I agree, too. And I think maybe... Michael, how about you?
I'm here. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I've got to add a little...
Oh, by the way, Daddy, you can get to me.
Hold on. Sorry.
Via Zoom. You're
now,
welcome.
Now, Jenny, you see why I asked if I can come to take your center today. Jenny said no, by the way.
I didn't say no.
I don't think one way or the other about the naming. I'll defer to the board members on it. Either way, it's fine by me.
Yeah, you know my feelings, I think that's a wise choice and a good choice. So, very good. So, we will move on then to Lisa and Chris discussing Park 11S as in SNAM.
Okay, well, I'm going to turn this over to Chris and see a discussion with this neighbor of this park. So, Chris, can I throw it to you?
Absolutely. So, I'm going to share my screen here so everyone can see the memo here. Here we go. So can everyone see it?
Yeah, now we can. Yes.
Excellent. So we were contacted by a resident regarding the abandoned alley behind Park 11S. So the first thing we had to figure out was where the heck is Park 11S. So I have some photos here for you guys. Basically, this is South Avenue, and this is Green Bay Road. So this park has a bus stop in it, and it's across the street from the park that is always flooded, that has the greenhouse where the park district maintains the front yard. So is everyone familiar with the location?
I drove by it yesterday. Actually, I walked by it yesterday.
So prior to this resident contacting us, this parcel did not appear on our publicly available park inventory matrix. So this is 1,650 square feet of what was half of an abandoned alley. So at one point there was an alley there, and the park district received half of the alley and the residents received half of the alley, and that was in 1933. So the park district has a PIN number for this property, and it is recorded on our tax exempt rolls. So currently the property is 18% of the property is taken up by the garages at 309, 315, and 319 Washington Avenue, which is basically 302 square feet. So this resident has contacted us in interest of purchasing the property. So this is unique. This resident owns this triangle here. Does everyone see my cursor?
Yes.
Yep.
The 325, 319, 315, 309, and they own another portion of the vacated alley here. So currently this is not, so here's a closer look here. This is the parcel that we're talking about. So what this effectively is right now is a tax-exempt backyard. So it is not currently accessible to the public. We have a very thick row of hedges here, and that kind of wraps around to this area. In my research, this resident was not the resident who built these homes encroaching on this property. The resident does live in one of these properties, but she is not the individual that illegally encroached on the property. So what we looked at is, you know, this is the property of the resident, all of these properties here. So in our research, we started, thinking, is this a parcel that, you know, what would it take to add this back to the park? If we decided all of a sudden, you know, we think that this has a high value to be added to Park 11S, we would have to cut down that mature landscaping berm and likely have to engage in legal action to force the demolition of those two garages and driveways. So I would like the board to consider engaging in the process to decide what they want to do with this park going forward. And if they would consider selling this to the resident and putting it back on the tax rolls, based on some estimates, the property as is would garner about $710 a year in taxes, of which the park district would receive 50 whole dollars.
So what we're looking for for the board today is to say, would you be interested in exploring this? What this means is that we'd have to go through a similar process that we did for Linden House, in which we have to take it to the circuit to court to allow us to sell it to them. So we can't, as you know, we can't sell any property unless we get approval from the courts to do so. So we'd have to engage in that process. I would first get estimates from our attorney to how much that would cost to go through that whole process. Kind of have an idea. We will have an idea from Linden. And then we would set that as part of the fee that we would charge for that parcel. So we would have to recoup all of our attorney's fees and then plus whatever else the board decides to do. I don't know if that once the homeowner hears that amount, if it's still of interest, but I just wanted to, before we even contacted our attorney to give us an estimate, I wanted to make sure that it was something the board would even consider, and then we would move down that process of start the more lengthy discussion with the attorneys and the homeowner.
Lisa, I think it's important to note that the parcel does not need to be subdivided off the park. It has an existing PIN number that we don't have to go through the plan committee. That process does not have to be executed. We would not be changing the historical use for the property. I mean, obviously, this person has acquired all of the parcels in that area, and acquiring this is about developing a future FAR calculation for a potential development, but that would go forward whether or not we sold this property or not.
Commissioners?
So my first thought when I read the memo earlier today was, huh, this is really interesting.
Right?
I think that was all of our first thought.
I didn't even know we owned it, to be honest, or she called me.
I walked down there to look for it, Josh, and I was like, I actually had the map with me yesterday. And I was like, I can't even find the place.
So my second thought was, you know, if it's so useless to us and we can get some money for it, we probably ought to consider it. But the third thought I had was, if this becomes the linchpin in, you know, a major development that causes a big kerfuffle, because, you know, everybody around it hates the idea of whatever the resident wants to do with this property later, maybe we just leave well enough alone. So I don't know if you have any insight into, like, how all these, are these properties all zoned residential?
Yes.
So they would, if they wanted to change the use, they would really have to get the...
Correct. It's in the same zoning district as the Linden House, I believe.
Okay.
But that is...
So if it's residential, they would have to go if they wanted to make it, say multi-family.
I don't know if that's 100%, but I do know that they could do that regardless if they own this property or not.
Exactly.
This would not be the linchpin in developing a future property or not.
Right. It would just make that property marginally bigger. More valuable, right, because it's bigger.
It would likely mean that they didn't have to set the property as far back, because they would have to have a certain degree off the property line for the placement of a new structure. So what they would be likely looking to do is center the property on the structure as opposed to having it be an odd shape and pushed up against the street, would be my guess, based on the setbacks required by the village.
Here are my two cents on this. The rational human being in me thinks exactly like Josh, like, holy cow, this is kind of, you know, we're not using it, doesn't make any difference. And then I keep thinking about the people who knocked on the Park District Board meetings when you guys all agreed to sell the Linden House and I came in afterwards. But so I've two thoughts that I wanted to ask. One of which is, I don't mind selling the land, especially because of all the things you guys can talk about, but I do think the optics of it are tough, and I was wondering, do we know of any other, like, small piece of land near a park that's for sale that we can kind of use to balance this out, to tell people, hey, look, we're not really getting rid of 700 feet, you know, can we remediate somehow? Probably not going to happen, but I thought I'd ask the question, is there any possibility of remediation at all?
We do have another one that's where the homeowner is encroaching on our land near a park, and I'm sure there's probably other examples if you look at surveys, but we did discover that a few years ago with one that's encroaching on.
No, I was thinking more, Commissioner Warren, of like, hey, there's a house for sale or a piece of land for sale that's about the same size that we could take the money from Peter to pay Paul, and sort of, at least in the optics world, that we're not really selling Park District land, we're not getting rid of it. So, completely irrational, you know, this is not a park. Is there anything like that out there?
You know, I just want to answer Commissioner Brooks's question a moment ago. It is zoned multifamily already. So it already has that zoning.
Okay.
I don't know of any small, that's a pretty small parcel that is next to existing parkland that's for sale right now that's not part of the residential. There's nothing.
It's not a buildable lot.
Pardon me?
It's not a buildable lot, so find it comparable, because there's other small slivers next to parks that are open green space that we've been approached about in the past, and previous boards said, you know, it's open for public use. We don't agree that, you know, public land should be sold. I think that the dialogue here is really the fact that this isn't really available for public use because their garages are on it.
No, that's the rational human being. I'm just thinking of, like, the soundbite of, oh, the Park District is selling land again, you know.
Oh, exactly.
Somebody that's developing a multifamily property.
Right, and that's what's going to happen is that, so there's going to be some sort of a there could be a controversy with this new development, and it all started with the park district. That being said, I think we can defend ourselves, but I just want to have that in the back of our heads. Ultimately, I'm okay selling this land. I do think it's worth letting people know that, you know, if we could remediate, we would, but there's just not availability to remediate 1,700 square feet near a park that we could use.
I want to make a note that Stephanie's correct. There are other houses that have been encroaching on park land long before Chris and I were here. So, you know, she made a point, I think probably your point was, we'll just open a can of worms with all these other people like, oh, well, we want this. The board has been approached, I think, before any of you are on the board, about little triangle pieces, you know, pieces like, oh, they would like that little piece to extend it so they could put a pool in their yard or extend their fence or whatever. We have a lot of little odd-shaped parcels that we own that we have to mow, that we take care of, that really don't have any really public use, that they were just given to us at one point. So Stephanie makes a very valid point. Does this open a can of worms that, okay, we did it for this, now everybody's going to come to us, and our usual line was like, we're not selling public land. But Chris also makes a good point that this has been encroached on, as garages has no public value.
It's already been done, and B, it's zoned differently than someone encroaching upon different type of zoned land, right?
Right. This is the only one I know, and I may be wrong because we don't know everything in town, but this is the only one I know that put a hard structure, like a garage, on it.
Correct.
Other ones are more plant materials and things like that, to, you know, that that kind of, they put a buffer between the parkland and their house, and maybe they encroached a little bit to make more of a buffer. This is the one I know that has actually hard garages on it. Who knows when that happened? It could have been, you know, 50, 60 years ago. So
it may have been before we even owned it, before 1933. I mean, this is the only abandoned alley that we own that currently has its own PIN number. So all of the properties along Green Bay Road had alleys, and they were absorbed into the park proper. This is the only one that has its own PIN number.
I mean, I don't think that this alley has any, you know, value to us at all. I'm glad to hear that we would make it part of the deal that we don't pay a cent, so we're not paying for any of the legal fees or anything, because I think that's very fair. But I do have that worry that it does open up things like that house on Green Bay that has a huge lot that we maintain. You know, those are, you know, it's all about the precedent and context, and, you know, hopefully it doesn't come back to create an issue, but you just don't know.
We do, that house on Green Bay, we do have a legal easement. There is a legal agreement about that property, but there isn't one about this one. But you're absolutely right, Commissioner.
What's house on Green Bay, what's the address?
We own the front yard of 538 Green Bay Road. So it's public land. It was donated to the park district at some point or another. We maintain it. It's a pretty good sized parcel. And they have an easement agreement to have a driveway accessing their property through the park.
The greenhouse?
Yes.
Yeah. Next
to that really cool modern house. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Lisa Shepherd, my thought, building on what you had said before about paying for legal fees, I could see that going a couple of different ways. One is that our estimate of the legal fees would be, you know, let's say that it's, you know, five times more than the potential buyer thinks the entire property is worth, right? Well,
right.
Then they're not going to buy it, right? On the other hand, if it's one-fifth of what they think the property is worth, then they might want to buy it, but we should still make sure that we're capturing significant positive value, because it's a heartburn for us, right? And
yeah, that, absolutely.
It's heartburn for us, and because we have a fiduciary responsibility to the residents of the park district. You know, even if we don't normally sell land, if in this case we decided to do that, we would want to be able to credibly argue that we got something of value for it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I agree, Jeff. Yep. It would have to be more than just the attorney fees that we get.
I'd like to add something. This is very similar to a street vacation. Been through that many times in Oak Park. And what makes this very special is that originally it was a street. Oak Park has a street vacation policy where they will sell vacated streets to the adjacent property owners. They do have a hearing process for that. And I think we, if we do decide to pursue this, we'll need a good communications plan.
Yes, that's exactly right, a good communications plan. It is a particularly unuseful finger of land, I would say, that should we decide to incorporate it into park property, it would be, strange. A strange little finger of land moving through people's backyards. So I would say I would say it's appropriate to pursue next steps, even if the result is we leave it as it is.
Does everybody agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We will go ahead and pursue the next step. Exactly what I needed.
Okay, Lisa. Any other business for us?
I don't have anything else. Does any other department else have anything?
Commissioners?
That's it.
Okay. So then I entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
Okay, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner yes. Boren? Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdonk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Okay. Meeting adjourned.